Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome. I'm Gary Loper, and this is Building Better Relationships. It's all about building better relationships in all the areas of your life, primarily with yourself, your partners, family, customers, prospects, community, and then expanding to your relationships with your business, money mindset, networking, health, spirituality, and more. The show is an eclectic conversion of all my gifts and passions. We're going to be offering coaching in life, business, interviewing with experts, talking about social media, and much, much more. There's an opportunity for you to ask questions that will not only help you, but will probably assist and benefit others as well. During the show, feel free to be able to leave a question in the chat room or call in to 646-478-4705. Or if you're listening to the podcast, feel free to drop me a note on Twitter at Gary Loper and with any questions or comments about this show or anything else we can be able to help you with. Tonight's a special show, and we'll just roll into this. Back February 15th, 2006, near Rochester, New York, something special happened that touched the world's heart. It was a story about hoop dreams and hopes and the miracles that rose up from the Greece Athenia High School gym and the life lessons we can all learn from a man who believed in an autistic boy. If you're not familiar with the story of J-Mac, there's a link in the episode information for this show, or simply go to YouTube and type in J-Mac, see the story. It brings tears to my eyes every time that I see it, so make sure that you have some tissues on hand. In a time where we hear that kids and adults are in an exclusionary type of position with each other and all the horrible things that they may do to hurt somebody else, on this night, Coach Jim Johnson, the kids, and everybody in the stands celebrated the differences, expressed pure joy in the accomplishment of Jason McElwain, and created a shift in the collective consciousness that dreams really do come true. So tonight, I'm honored to be able to have Coach Jim Johnson, the man who's behind the miracle, or who has played a part of the miracle. How do you describe yourself, Jim, and where do you fit into this? Because I know, without going into the whole story, but let's just start.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks for having me, Gary.
Yeah.
I've been a coach for over 30 years in basketball, predominantly at the high school level. And Jason came into our program in 2004. And at that point, I really didn't know much about autism. And certainly, it's become very prevalent now in our society. It's under 1 in 100 and even more prevalent in boys. So I got a lot of education, and the great thing for me personally is that Jason and I's relationship has continued to grow. That occurred in 2006, and he's been back in our program helping us as a volunteer assistant coach since 2008. So I see him almost every day during the basketball season, and then still quite often in the off season because he comes over to school a lot, and we still do quite a bit together. So that's been really neat to be able to continue to grow a relationship that was established back, really for me more in 2005 because his first year he was on our JVs as their team manager in the last 2 years. Yeah, the last 2 years they spent with me and our varsity team. So it's been a thrill for me and to get to know him and to see the passion that he brings every day and how much he wants to help others be successful, like people that kind of helped him with his magical night and continue to grow to this day. So it's been a real blessing.
Yeah, I know it's. I watched a lot of clips because I know when I first saw the story, it was magical. It was and it just touched my heart in so many ways. I think, you know, like I said, it really do brings me to tears each time that I see the story. And even reading your book and going through there, there's a lot of things that that I know that there was a higher hand in directing and putting all of these pieces to be able together. Because I know you said you've been coaching for 27 years, and you grew up in that area, so it still was kind of the hometown situation for you all, your whole life there.
Yeah, actually, my father was my high school coach, and I actually coach at a high school in the town I grew up in. Our town's pretty big, and we have, when I grew up, there were three high schools, and now there's four. And so I actually went to one of the schools in Greece, which is a suburb of Rochester, New York, and I now coach at one of the other neighboring high schools. And so I've been in Greece almost my entire life. I had a few years I spent outside of Greece. And you know, going back to your point, it's interesting because I get a privilege to speak around the country, and I show a 5-minute video about the JMAC game, and almost every time it still brings me to tears. And I've probably seen that video, I don't know, 500 times now, and it still chokes me up deeply. It was just it was certainly a day in my life, you know, as a coach, that you want to try to help kids reach their potential and help them make their dreams come true. And I'm so blessed to be that I was part of that, because it was a night I'll cherish for the rest of my life.
Well, let's just back up a little bit for the benefit for somebody else who may not familiar with the story, or they've forgotten about it. Or let's just sort of go back, how JMAC came into the whole high school, and how he tried out for the JV team, and just sort of bring us into how JMAC came into your basketball program, and how it led up to the 15th of February.
Sure. Well, actually, I didn't really know Jason at all his freshman year. He was actually a runner, and he ran indoor track his freshman year. But his sophomore year, he started to come in the office in the fall of his sophomore year, and he started to ask my colleague, was my JV basketball coach at the time, and he'd come in like every other day and ask him, coach, when's practice? And it was funny because he was a real little guy at the time, but he had a really deep voice, and I'd say, coach, who is that young man that keeps coming in? He goes, his name is Jason McElwain. And so when he tried out for the team after a couple days, my JV coach, his name was Jeff Amoroso, he said, Jim, Jason's not a very good player, but boy, he's got a big heart, and he's so passionate about basketball. I think we should keep him in the program. I said, well, what do you got in mind? He says, I'm going to offer him the team manager job, but I'm going to practice with the team. And that's what he did. And, there were some trials and tribulations early in the season, but you could see the kids really start to take a real loving for him, and saw this really nice bond. And actually, Jason's first opportunity, as Jeff Amoroso, my JV coach, put him in with about 2 minutes to go in the final JV game, and he actually, the first time he touched the ball, he shot a three and it didn't go in, but he got fouled, and he got an opportunity to go to the foul line and shoot three shots, and lo and behold, he made them all, and the place exploded.
Oh, cool.
We celebrated by giving him a plaque at the banquet, and we actually read it to everybody, and we said, it said on the plaque, Jason J. Mac McElwain, Greece Athena's all-time greatest free throw shooter, because he was 3 for 3, you can't beat that, and he was really elated. And then between his sophomore and junior is when I start to really get to know him much better, because he started to come to all our off-season workouts, and he was had such passion for basketball, and he just loved the kids. So when he tried out for the varsity as a junior, he wasn't good enough to be on the team, but I really wanted to keep him around, and I offered him the team manager's job. And at the time, I had kind of a big stumbling block in my career. I had been a fairly successful coach, from a win-loss measurement, but we kept losing in our sectional semifinals. In our area, the sectional tournament is a pretty big deal if you can win that. And so Jason kind of adopted this mantra that he was going, we're going to stay focused and help Coach Johnson win his first sectional title, his junior. And lo and behold, we got to the semifinals now for the sixth time in my career, and we lost at the buzzer to our crosstown rival. And so we were all really disappointed, but that wasn't stopping Jason, and he even put more time in between his junior and senior to make the team as a senior. So what happened when he came in is, you know, after a few days of tryouts his senior year, I brought him in and I said, Jason, unfortunately I got some good news and some bad news. And he goes, well, tell me the bad news. I said, well, you're not quite good enough to make the team. And this time he was really visibly disappointed, but I said, you know, but I got some good news. And his head popped back up and he says, well, what do you got in mind? I said, well, for senior night, I'm going to give you a uniform and hopefully get you in the game. And I kid people that he would periodically ask me about that uniform during the season. And, of course, I define periodically as about every other day. So he was really pretty excited. And the interesting thing, I share a lot in my book about that we had a lot of difficulties early in the season at the point where I nearly resigned because we were in so much turmoil. But with the support of my staff and my wife, I decided, you know, I got to practice what I preach about overcoming adversity. And so I hung in there, and Jason really didn't get a great comprehension of exactly all the turmoil that we had, but he was like our glue. You know, he just was so into the, you know, helping this team. And although we really got off to a tough start his senior year, after Christmas break, we finally got it going, and we won 8 out of our last 9 going into senior night. And then that night it was just really special for me because we always honor our seniors on our final home game. But this time to see Jason instead of in his white shirt and black tie, he's now wearing his number 52 uniform, and that memory I'll cherish for the rest of my life. And see him embrace his parents in uniform was really special. And then so after, as the game began, that year we had a great student body, you know, and it's it shows on a lot of the videos. They called themselves the Six Men, and they would always come dressed in our school colors, black and gold. And they start chanting at the opening tap that, we want J-Mac. And, you know, but going into it, I wanted to get him in the game, but I felt it was important that I got everybody else in before I can put him in. And so with just over 4 minutes to go, I made that decision to bring him into the game, and figuring that he had enough time, because my dream for him was I wanted to see if he could score a basket in a varsity game. I thought that would be a memory he would cherish for the rest of his life. And so when he did get in the game, I feel like I'm a pretty macho guy, but what happened was our sixth man, that group of students, gave him a standing ovation. And what Jason and I did not know is one of our JV parents got this idea to make all these placards of J-Mac's face, and they gave them to the sixth man, and they showed him when he got in the game, and I got so overwhelmed with emotion that tears started to flow down my face, and I sat down, and I was just visibly touched. And then the game starts again, and the first time Jason gets the ball, he shoots a 3 from the right corner, and it's not even close. I mean, he misses by like 10 feet, and I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, God, please just help him score one basket. And then our second possession, he gets a much shorter shot, and, of course, we had a little drama because it hits the backboard, it hits the rim, and it falls off. And I'm saying to myself, well, God's starting to listen. We're getting a little closer here. And then the third possession, he receives the ball, this time behind the arc again, and he makes a 3, and the place just implodes. It's pure bedlam. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking to myself, God is a basketball fan. Not only has Jason scored, but he's got a 3-pointer, and nothing can get better than this. And then I kid people that his idol was Kobe Bryant. In fact, he used to sign his name, Jason Kobe McElwain, and He literally turned into Kobe Bryant for the next 3 minutes. He just started making shot after shot, and it was truly.
Wasn't that about a month after Kobe had the 81? So that's probably where
it was in the same year. It was. In fact, he beat Kobe that year. People that was up for the ESPY was Kobe scoring 81 in a game, and then Jason actually beat him out for the ESPY that year. So. And the other thing I'll never forget about how the game ended, because Jason for the last like 3.5 minutes. You know, he would go down the court and his teammates would screen for him. We'd throw him the ball and he'd shoot. In fact, I still kid him to this day, Jason, I'm still looking for your first assist. But the last possession, our opponent, and I certainly want to give kudos to our opponent and their coach, Spencer Port and Josh Harder with his name, because they were so gracious that night. But they scored. And our player that takes the ball out of bounds and throws it at our point guard this time throws it right to Jason. And he's dribbling down, and then the clock's winding down. You know, it's down to 5, 4, and at 3, he pulls up like 3 feet behind the arc. It's almost like an NBA three. And I'm thinking to myself, Jason, don't shoot from there. You're going to ruin the moment. And he throws up this rainbow, and it swishes. And I look over, and our complete student body is on the floor, and they just rush on the court, and all our players rush on the court. And I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, I'm living the movie Rudy. This is incredible. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing I'll never forget is Jason's parents have an interesting dynamic. His dad's 6'6", and his mom's 5 foot tall. And I see this little bitty lady bobbing and weaving through the crowd to get to Jason, and she embraces him. And then our players put Jason up on his shoulders, and at this point I have no idea how many points he has. And our public address announcer comes on. He says, the leading scorer for the Trojans tonight, J-Mac, with 20 points. I think quickly with my math brain, I go, oh my gosh, he played the whole game, he scored 160. And so it was truly remarkable. It was in the night that I've told the story numerous times, and it never gets old for me. It was just so unbelievable.
Yeah, it was incredible. Now, what's the best way to be able to talk about? I know with people with disabilities, there's all sorts of different levels, and every single person, disabled or able-bodied, are unique. With their challenges and their gifts. And so I know it was touching because, even when I grew up in high school and the work that I've done with people with special needs, that level of acceptance by the student body is not always an embracing kind of situation.
Right.
So were there qualities that JMAC on how the school had and everybody else just embraced him and loved him that way?
Yeah, first of all, that's the other thing that just brought me to tears to me, because when I watched the video the next day, I didn't realize, because I was crying my ass out on the bench, that how much not only was a crowd, but it also was teammates. I mean, they were jumping up and down on the bench, and it was truly incredible. But, to answer your question, I think what really was so embracing with Jason was the fact that he was so pure in the fact that he really cared so deeply about the people in the school, and in basketball he was just so into our team and wanted to see our team be successful. And because he was so giving, and the kids really they started traditions. Like, they would go over to his house on days of games, and they would have snacks, and they still talk about that, when I see some of his former teammates. And they just develops this such bond. And then, there's a young man that never had played in the varsity level, and he gets in, and then, of course, he shocks the world. And just that was what was so awesome, to see how much support he had. But I think it really had a lot to do with the type of person he was, that he was so caring and just cared so much about people and really wanted to see the best for everybody, that people really for people that aren't aware with autism, that he has some things that certainly at times can annoy people. And people outside looking in, they have trouble with that. But once you start to get to know him, you realize how much he's such a loving and caring person, and really mm-hmm. wants the best for everybody, that he just grows on you in such a positive way. And I think that's what happened, is that, those cumulative effect for those couple years, and the kids just, grew to love him. And, of course, when he had the special night, see how they responded so favorably was just something I'll cherish for the rest of my life.
Now there were two other things that sort of came to my mind, because I remember that Jason's mom did she come to the JV coach and because she recognized Jason's passion for basketball and what it meant to him on how many different levels? And so do you know what her motivation was for her to be able to approach the coach and try to find a way for Jason to be a part of the team?
Well, you know, when he was going through tryouts, she left a voicemail that was very heartfelt, you know, to my JV coach that I actually listened to as well, and just if there's a way that we could keep in the program. And, you know, so that touched us very deeply. And, you know, the interesting thing with that was that his mom and dad, I really did not. I talked to his mom only once or twice on the phone, and I never met her until senior night. That's the first time she ever came to a game. And so I really didn't know her. In fact, the other thing that I'll never forget about that night was with about a minute to go in the game that night when Jason scored all those points, I get a tap on my shoulder. I'm sitting on a bench, and, you know, it's not normal. I get a tap on my shoulder. I look behind me, and it's Jason's mother, and she is crying her eyes out, and she embraces me, and she whispers in my ear, "Coach, this is the best gift you could have ever given my son." And, of course, I cry harder. It was, you know, just a very touching moment for me. You know, it was an interesting dynamic because Dad was the one that he came to all the games and would pick Jason up, and Mom was kind of in the, you know, behind the scenes. So I knew Dad a lot better than I do Mom. But you know, it was you know, really special to see how he you know, embraced his parents in uniform on senior night, and then, you know, to have them there was really special.
Now, another thing that also sort of caught me in reading the book and going through this stuff, and it probably ties into the determination,
mm-hmm.
and Jason stay focused. And,
right.
I forgot who mentioned it in the book, but they said that, you know, people with autism probably would have rehearsed that night each of those shots, each of those games. But what mm-hmm. I saw was Jason was such a student of the game that he just absorbed so much of it and played so much of it in his head, or if he was in the backyard or a gym practicing by himself, that he already played that in his head. So when he mm-hmm. did get in the game for that 4-11, he just played the movie that was in his mind. So that's, you know, so when I'm looking at sort of the law of attraction and focusing on what you want, you know, I really, you know, once I saw that in a book, I'm going, this is the power. This is the power that the mind can be able to create.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with you. And I think, you know, I've said sometimes in my speeches sometimes I don't bring it up, but I felt in many ways that his autism was actually an asset for him that night because of the fact that, you know, he was so focused. And you know, when he missed his first shot. I think, you know, some kids, for your so-called, quote-unquote, normal kid, they might have been so overwhelmed with the fact, I'm not going to shoot again. I missed that shot. That's embarrassing. And that really, I think he had to rehearse that he, you know, saw himself making shots. You know, and we do imagery in our with our team all the time the days before games, and I think he really bought into that. And, you know, and it wasn't going to stop him because he missed a shot. That was just a miss. You know, I'm ready for the next one. And, you know, I think that's a great lesson for anybody because, you know, that's what life is all about, is, you know, having the perseverance to overcome adversity. And, you know, it's one of the things I talk about in the 6 Keys to Making Your Dreams Come True, is I just think that's one of the essential things, is the ability to overcome adversity and show that perseverance and that never give up attitude. And that's Jason illustrated that so well that night.
Mm-hmm. And, well, another thing, what also touched me too was I know that it was senior night, so you're bringing in everybody, you're giving everybody an opportunity to play. And what touched me is a lot of the guys who didn't get much playing time throughout the year, but they're in the game. Now, did any of them take another shot during that last 4 minutes? Or I sort of read that they kept passing the ball to Jason.
Right. The other thing was awesome because, you know, another one of the keys I talk about is being a team player. And to me, that those four guys who were out on the floor with Jason was the essence of what a team player is all about, because I had never said to the, you know, those kids that they had to pass Jason the ball, and that was all of their own heart and their great respect for him. And I don't think it was totally planned that they were going to do that. I think what happened is, you know, I think they were helping him try to get a basket, and then when he finally made a basket, then he, you know, once he made the first one, I think he made three in a row, and then, of course, you know, everybody's behind him, and after that, I don't think there was anybody thinking about taking a shot besides, you know, just giving the ball to Jason. But, you know, to me, that was just the essence of what a team should be all about, is, you know, to give to others and, you know, be, you know, you know, having a life of service where you're helping others. And that was certainly a great example of that.
Right. And that's one of the keys when we talked about before the show about Bob Berg's book, The Go-Giver, and that law of influence is being able to put the needs of others before yours.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, that was just an embodiment of that, is they saw, you know, they saw that they were trying to be able to make it a special night for at least one basket. But when they saw the enthusiasm and everything else, you know, it just, you know, they put their needs aside to be able to, and the other team, was it Spencer Pork was the name of the team?
Right. Yep.
And exactly. Yeah, and it's like, you know, I know that, you know, it was a very class thing that they did. Is I know that you talked to the coach beforehand, and the game wasn't pivotal for the other team, right?
Correct.
So they had agreed, but they didn't really lay down, but they didn't play tight defense on Jason either, did they?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, the thing that's was interesting is I didn't really think about it initially, but the more I've, you know, been away from that game, is you think about what he did. Because I've said to people, you know, when I travel, is that, you know, I mean, think about it. When's the last time you heard of any player at any level scoring 20 points in 4 minutes? I mean, it just doesn't happen. And then to think that it was a young man that had never played, and, you know, he's learning disabled and has autism, and, of course, that adds all that. But that's the thing that's just, you know, brings chills to me, is because I've seen some really neat stories, and I feel like in some ways we've kind of done such a positive thing that, you know, other people are trying to find ways to help young people, you know, have their dreams come true. And, you know, I've seen a kid with some type of disability, you know, score a touchdown, or you know, I've seen it happen a few other times in basketball games where, you know, a kid has scored a basket or whatever, and that's wonderful stuff. I've never heard of anything in all the years I've been alive, you know, in any kind of sport where someone's done something that, you know, even the players at the, you know, highest level, I have not heard someone doing that in so long. You know, I mean, it's like, wow.
No, and right, and I think it's a lot of things that you described, sometimes you can see that they were manufactured.
Right, exactly.
Else. But what I saw here was other than, you know, an agreement to be able, Jason's going to be in, you're going to give him this opportunity. But it was real. It was Jason's skills,
right?
To be able
to
put, you know, so it wasn't like that. You know, it was like wasn't the parting of the Red Sea, and he ran in 20 yards for a touchdown.
Right.
He had to put the ball up. You know, and you know, what was the shooting percentage? So just,
well, he's six for 10 from 3-point line. In fact, I had one of my, you know, other coaches in the areas, because players were like, you know, about a week later, so, you know, oh, well, you can make do it. They weren't guarding him. And he goes, how many can you make 6 out of 10 when you're standing by yourself? And, you know, after
right,
he tries,
exactly.
You know, it's not that easy, you know. So, and then let alone
and
the game.
Especially
yeah,
with the crowd going on top of it.
Yeah,
it's just,
exactly. Yeah.
You know, I used to bowl quite a bit, and I know a couple times that I had 11 strikes in a row and going for 300, and the place is just deafening quiet. You could be able to hear your knees rattle, and you know, you just couldn't exit. You know, for, you know, just laid it short the first time and, you know, got a six count. The next, you know, but the next two times I was closer and had 10, you know, nine counts. But mm-hmm. it was just, you know, right. it's just amazing that you still have to be able to perform. And I think that's
yep.
an incredible thing that bridges over between disabilities and able-bodied is just that
right.
focus, that execution, and, you know, it's everyday people and being
right.
able to make those dreams come true.
Yep. No,
now, I know one of the things that, you know, that we talked about, and it's, I mean, there's so much we can explore, but I know that what really touched me was some of the letters that you got.
Mm-hmm.
About the hope that you gave, you know, families when they saw this story, they met you, they met Jason, you know, besides the celebrity swing up, you know, the everyday people's lives that this impacted in such a positive way was just, again, overwhelming.
Yeah, I mean, that to me is like the biggest blessing, is because I think there's so many people looking for hope. And when you have hope alive, you know, your dreams can come true. And, you know, stories like Jason's, I think, has inspired so many. And, you know, that's where I think the blessing is that, you know, you, by sharing a story like that, because, you know, the unfortunate thing, we all know this, you know, that in the news, that, you know, negative news for the most part sells much better than
mm-hmm.
positive news. And so for me, I'm very blessed because I get to go around and tell a story that's so positive. You know, I mean, there were certainly some negative things that, you know, happened during our season. You know, there were great lessons for me and certainly our team, but at the same point, to be able to go and share about how a young man, you know, overcame a lot of obstacles, and it really gets you thinking, you know, if this young man could do this, you know, what can you actually do? And, you know, I think it's, and just keeping hope alive for, you know, for the autistic community, certainly, but anybody with disabilities, you know, it's giving them hope that, hey, maybe their son or daughter can do more than they actually think they can. And, you know, so, you know, people need hope, they need inspiration, you know, and those are things that are going to help you continue to move forward and, you know, go for those dreams.
Now, what have you seen in the 7 years that's transpired since then about, you know, awareness for autism and other people with disabilities? I know you've worked with some people from some autism organizations and things, but
mm-hmm.
have you seen more of an awareness and education and acceptance? What have you seen in that? Because you were an integral part of being able to bring this situation to a worldwide stage.
Yeah. Well, I think it's the awareness is a lot better, and I think that there's just been a lot more research done, and I think there's, you know, kids now are being diagnosed so much earlier, and when you get early intervention, it just helps those young people so much in, you know, overcoming some of the obstacles that you do have with autism or any kind of disability. So I, you know, I'm proud that, you know, that story, I think, is really spurred on for people to, you know, learn so much more, and, you know, and there's a lot of research, you know, because they still don't have exact, you know, why is, what
mm-hmm.
is the cause of autism, and certainly there's varying degrees of it, but, you know, I think it's really opened a lot of people's eyes, and, you know, as we talked earlier, I think it's given a lot of people hope, and when you have hope, it really inspires a lot of people.
Now, I know that you said that when your JV coach, when you notice, you said that, you know, he's not a very good basketball player, but he has so much heart.
Mm-hmm.
So you guys were able to look beyond and be able to see Jason.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's an important lesson, is to be able to look beyond sort of the physical presence or some of the things that may shift your perception. I think that in itself is an incredible lesson, is to be able to look to be able to see the person within.
Oh, I absolutely agree.
And be able to look for their gifts.
Right. And, you know, I think, because, you know, as a teacher and a coach, I'm always talking to the young people about if you're going to be exceptional, you have to be great in the things you can control. And, you know, I use Jason as an illustration a lot. You know, he can control how hard you work, and Jason has a great work ethic. He can control your attitude. In fact, one of the quotes I give to my classes at the beginning of the year, and I always give to my team at the beginning of the year, is, attitudes are contagious, as yours worth catching. And you know, I think it really gets them thinking. And you know, and I think it's even more powerful for someone like Jason that, you know, has autism and has some learning disabilities, and yet he comes in every day with a smile on his face and a great attitude. And you know, he wants to get better, and he wants to help others get better. And I think those are things that are really contagious in a positive way. And that's what you need. You need more people that are giving people hope and inspiration and desire. And, you know, I talk in my talks, you know, I think it all starts with passion, you know, finding what you love to do and being passionate about it. I think being excited every day, having energy, having enthusiasm, you know, those are all basic fundamentals that are going to help you be successful.
Right. And I think that, you know, that's very important for, you know, for another coach, for teachers, or some, even a family member, to be able to have that awareness, to be able to look beyond some of the things. And it's, you know, when you know better, you're going to be able to do better. And just trying to be able to, you know, get some awareness, find out. Because I know that in when I was doing massage for people with disabilities, I had to be, there were, one of my clients, she's in her 50s now, but I've been working with her for about 7 years. But her other caregivers would be talking to her and sort of chastising her like she was, you know, that she was emotionally 50 years old. Mm-hmm. But she wasn't. You know, she's developmentally delayed amongst other things. But really, her emotional age is about 10 or 12 years old. And once I got to that point of realizing and accepting what her limits were, you know, I never had a problem. You know, I had no problems. Very, you know, communication, cooperation was just exceptional. Mm-hmm. And I think that sometimes, you know, that just shows, you know, that we look at somebody. Because even, and now, you know, we just saw Jason on a clip where he's gone through his growth spurts. So he's 6 foot tall, and so you would just look at things, and you know, at first glance, you would think, okay, he's the same as me,
right?
But when we look inside and we be able to see and look at them on who they are, then we're going to be able to connect and be able to see their gifts,
right?
Cool.
Yeah, I think that's you know, really important that you know, and I share a story about Jason from the fact of you know, being able to set goals and having a plan to accomplish it. He came to me just over a year ago, and he said, Coach, I got a new goal. And I said, what's that? And I said, I'm going to run the Rochester Marathon. I said, wow, because he had been a runner in high school, but he hadn't been running as much. And I said, well, what's your goal for the Rochester Marathon? And he says, you know, unfortunately, I'm bringing this up in, with the tragedy that just happened, but his goal was to make the Boston Marathon, and for that you have to qualify at a certain time. And I said, well, what's your qualifying time for your age? And he says, it's 3 hours and 5 minutes. And, you know, I don't know if you are that aware of a marathon or if you know the listeners
at
3 hours and 5 minutes for your first marathon, it's really fast. And
that's exceptional time, yeah.
Yeah.
Because the able bodies, they're finishing up at about 2:10 or something, right?
Yeah, I mean, the fastest you know, the people, I think the world record's like, you know, 207 or something. But, you know, I mean, but, you know, for your average runner, you're running 3.5 hours, 4 hours, you know, or much longer. And so I said, well, what are you going to do? And he says, well, I've got Coach Shoemaker, which was our cross-country coach that he ran for in high school. We've developed this plan, and, you know, he gave him some nutritional ideas, and he gave him a whole training regimen. And you talk about a young man that just followed the plan to a T. And unfortunately, the story has a happy ending. Last September, he ran his first marathon, and he finished in 3 hours, 1 minute, and 50 seconds, and he qualified for Boston. And fortunately for him, he did not go to Boston this year, but he's actually going to go next year. So, but it's just a great learning experience for anybody, the power of setting a goal and then, coming up with a plan and sticking to it and, some of the perseverance and all the things we've just talked about that, you can do it. And he's a great illustration.
And not to minimize it, but at 3:01, he would have cleared the finish line and with an hour to spare.
yeah, exactly. So,
Well, I know that we sort of talked around a little bit about your six essential keys. We talked a little bit about goal setting and perseverance and being a team player, but do you want to share a little bit more about those keys?
Yeah, the six keys I talk about is passion, and I talk about finding two questions I always ask is what do you love to do, and how can you make it a big part of your life? And I think that's where it all starts, because I think when you have passion for something, that you're going to be you're going to have a lot of energy, and you're going to put a lot of time, and anytime you invest time in something, there's a good chance you're going to get better at it. And then the second key I talk about is mission, and I share a lot about Stephen Covey's book, The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, and actually I've been just finishing up Rick Warren's book on Purpose Driven Life, and those are just great books in talking about why were you put on this earth, and whether you're religious or not, I do believe in God, and I always ask why did God put me on this earth, and I started to write down different things, and I've kind of evolved my personal mission statement right now is to be an outstanding role model that makes a positive difference in the world by helping others make their dreams come true. And what I always share with people is that I think when you understand, your purpose or your mission, that it really guides you in making choices. And, when it really gets me thinking more and more, if I make this choice, is that really why I was put on this earth? And I think it just helps me. And, I always talk to young people about, if you make good choices, chances are good things are going to happen. If you make bad choices, chances are bad things are going to happen. But I think when you have a real direction, that makes a significant difference. And then my third one is to be an effective goal setter, and we talked about that. And a couple things I talk about is that when you think it, ink it. You got to write it down. I've done extensive research on goal setting, and I know from my research about 3% of America writes their goals down. And I kind of share some ideas that I've done from learning from others. I write my goals down on cards now, and I read them in front of a mirror at least 3 times a day. And I write, actually for the last couple of years, I've started to write my goals down in the morning, every morning, as kind of a discipline to just refocus on what is important to me. And then the fourth one I've already talked about, perseverance. I really get to talk about it, that never give up attitude. Then, I'm going to stay strong mentally and physically through, difficult times. And then the fifth one I call carpe diem, and that's, seize the day. And I break that down into two components, and that's having a great work ethic and a positive attitude. And my illustration I mentioned earlier is Jason, because he was a young man that had never gotten a chance to play, but he, his work ethic was great. He always came to practice early, stayed late, and then his attitude was infectious in a positive way. And then the one together is, and I think this is in anything you do, you got to learn to work with others and, help others and be a servant of others. And, that's what being a team player is all about, and the best teams are the teams that are thinking about others first before themselves, and the we before me, and those kinds of things, and easier to talk about than actually making fruition all the time. But to me, that's what the essence of life is helping others. So when you put those all together, then you got a pretty good chance of making your dreams come true. And I always talked that one of the best ways you can make your dreams come true is to help others make their dreams come true.
Good stuff. I know that, I was just looking looking through your book and looking at some of the stuff that I've highlighted. And I just remember, too, that I know that and people can be able to read the story, but along the way to a lot of the great stories and the great moments in life, there's always probably some undercurrent of stuff that's going on there. And I really think that those are challenges that are brought to us to really be for us to be able to sharpen our focus and to be able to keep moving forward and to be able to really push through, because it's the universe and God, you know, bring us these challenges to be able to test us and to be able to help us grow. And we only grow through those challenges. If it was always easy, there would never be growth. So I know that you wrote in here that you knew that God threw this adversity in your path so that you could persevere to become a better person.
Go ahead.
Well, and wasn't because of this this adversity, or was it the year before when you were talking with your mom and you were ready to give up, and your mom said that she thought that God had a bigger plan for you?
Yeah, you know, I mean, my mom has a lot of wisdom, but both my mom and dad were educators, and, you know, we're very close, and my mom has gone to numerous games, both when I played and, you know, my many years in coaching, and, you know, as I said, when we went through those hard times of not, you know, a couple of years before, I didn't know if it was ever going to happen, and you know, that's what my mom started sharing me. You know that, you know, God's just got to have a better plan for you. And of course, at the time, I wasn't sure she was telling me the truth, but it certainly turned out she was a prophet. And you know, but I think that's what life is all about: is that you're always going to have problems and challenges, and you know, it really comes down to how you go about with them, you know, and your attitude towards them, and being able to overcome obstacles, you know, and that's why I think it's so important to, you know, study other people that have been successful, because you can almost always see that, you know, they've gone through a lot of adversity in their lives, and, you know, I mean, a lot of people think the greatest president we ever had was Abraham Lincoln, and if you read his story. I mean, all the things he had, nervous breakdown, and I mean, the list goes on, and there's just so many people like that. I mean, one of my favorite Americans is Martin Luther King, and you know, all the things he went through, I mean, look mm-hmm. at the change he made that was so positive for this world by overcoming those adversities.
Edison, 10,000 different ways not to make the light bulb.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. You know,
I think Colonel Sanders was turned down over 1,200 times as he traveled mm-hmm. around, you know, the southeast part of the country in a station wagon for months, living in his car, being turned down 1,200 times. So,
yeah,
that perseverance and things were, you know, it's just, I don't know, it's just one of the quotes that I share all the time on Twitter, but paraphrasing, it's something that nobody is successful the first time they try to do something.
Yeah.
And to be able, you know, and just, you know, going back and just thinking that if we would have quit trying to walk the first time we tried to learn how to walk.
Right.
You know, so it's amazing. And I know that, you know, there's so many great things that we can be able to talk about, but it's, what really sort of impressed me, or I got caught, I didn't realize sort of the Cinderella story that you and Jason took afterwards. I mean, and this was something, so you put Jason in the game out of, you know, respect for his loyalty and his passion to your team.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like you didn't have any expectations for anything else to happen, maybe get a basket. And then it turned out that, you know, as big as this story got, it didn't even make the headline in your paper that next day.
Yeah, yeah.
And then all the news media and then just sort of picked up worldwide. And just, can you share a little bit about that, that sort of overnight, that first couple of weeks right after the game, and all the things that happened.
Yeah, sure. It was, the one thing that I will say personally that I'm very proud of is for me, it was the purity of the game, the fact that, I had never alerted any media before the game that, that I possibly was going to put Jason in. And what I'm most proud of is the fact that I put him in because of the fact of his commitment and loyalty, and he deserved an opportunity. And when he had that magical night, of course I was numb. And one of my responsibilities as a varsity basketball coach is you have to call the game in. And so I shared the story with the writer that night, and she asked me some about it. In fact, somebody from the game had called the newspaper before I even called, and she says, I think I made a mistake. Your team manager got in the game and scored 2 points, right? And I said, no, he scored 20. And, I was numb, Gary, and I didn't. But at first I didn't realize, what a feat it really was. And, I was just so excited for him. And so that night I really didn't get much sleep. And I got up the next morning and expecting to see a headline, like J-Mac leads Trojans, because we tied for the division title by winning that game. And, and we did get a headline, but it said something along the lines, the Trojans win division or tie for division or something. And I'm like, I guess it wasn't that big of a deal. And, it does mention in the article that he scored 20 points. And then I get to school and I kid people that I didn't do too much teaching that day. We actually watched our game film over and over again. And I remember kids coming in and go, Coach, this is going to get ESPN. And, of course, I'm like, ESPN? This didn't even get a headline or DNC, our local paper. And and then the interesting thing is, Gary, I really thought that's all where it would end, because I, nothing else. I didn't call anybody. And what actually had happened behind the scenes, it was Jason's speech pathologist that had worked with him, for 4 years. I was at the game, and he was so touched that he actually called one of the local TV stations that next day at school and said, you got to come and borrow the tape from the coach. This is an unbelievable story. And they followed up on it. They did come and borrow the tape, and they showed it that night, and it got a really nice response from the Rochester community. So the next day, which was a Friday, we had three local TV stations come in, and then that night, one of the local sportscasters called me that evening and said, Jim, this story is unbelievable. Would you mind if I send it out nationally? I said, no, if it can make an impact on the country, I think it'd be wonderful. So he sent it out, and, it was a very quiet weekend. Now, we were going into what we call our February break, where our students are off school, but our team came back because now we were preparing for our sectional tournament. In fact, we were playing at the end of that week. And Monday morning, I'm getting ready for practice, and the phone rings, and it's CBS Evening News. And they said, Coach, we heard about the game. Can we come in and do a story? And I said, sure. And I said, when you come in? They said, well, be in a few hours. They were coming in from New York City, which is about an hour flight, but about a six-hour drive. So they flew in and did the story later that week. And then as a kid, Friday, it was pretty typical practice at Athena. We were interviewed by ESPN, Good Morning America, and CNN before practice. And then ESPN stayed and did that long thing that ended up being about a five-minute documentary that, is now on YouTube. It's been hit over a million times, that kind of thing. So, and then after that, Gary, it was the next 2 weeks was just crazy. I mean, my phone was ringing off the hook both at work and home. And of course, Jason's was getting overwhelmed with calls. And I mean, when you talk about media attention, we were on so many different shows, and we had to turn down a lot because we were still playing. So we and then we were getting movie producers and people want to write a book. And I mean, it was just overwhelming. It was probably about 2.5 weeks before it started to settle down a little bit. I mean, literally for about 2 straight weeks, I would leave the office for an hour. I'd come back and there'd be 15 voicemails. I mean, it was just incredible. Our 15 minutes of fame probably lasted a little bit longer than that. And certainly it's
and it's still alive. It's still alive in some ways.
Yeah. It's you know, it's, and as you, we had talked earlier, you know, it's given so much hope to people, and you know, I'm blessed now that I got an opportunity to share it in a book, and I hope to write another book I'm mentoring someday, and also the fact that I've been able to you know, go around and give motivational keynotes, and I developed the leadership workshop that I've shared. So, you know, it's been a real blessing to be able to give back and help others. So.
Okay. Now you mentioned a movie project. So is that still in the works, or is there?
You know what? Right now it's stopped for a while, and I'm not sure where we are. We had an unfortunate the executive producer that was signed on, a lady named Laura Ziskin, that was pretty big in Hollywood. She was involved with the Spider-Man movies, the initial ones. She actually passed away, and so it's. It's been stymied right now. I'm certainly hoping someday that, because I think it'll be a great movie, you know. But the funny thing about, you know, movies is they can sometimes, you know, take a long time. I mean, you look at some of the, you know, big sports movies over the years that, you know, didn't come on to, like I just had the opportunity, Jason a few weeks ago met Vince Papale, that they did the movie The Invincible, and Vince actually and I have connected. We've talked on the phone, and you know, when he made The Eagles was in the middle 70s, and that movie came out in 2006, you know, and certainly movies like Hoosiers and Remember the Titans are also illustrations of, you know, events that happened, you know, many years after when the movie came out. So I'm certainly hoping that a movie will come someday, because I think, it would be a great inspirational story to share on the big screen for sure.
Well, I think you know, like those examples that you shared, but I'm also, you know, I've just started recently sort of diving into the newly released book by Napoleon Hill that was sort of withheld for 75 years. And it's really, because there's a lot of things that were talked about in it that were very controversial back in the 30s, but really fit in today's times, even though it was written back in the 30s. So there probably is a universal timing that we'll just go on, and when the time is right for it, we need to be able to go there. But, you know, I think you mentioned out there about making an impact on a country. You know, I think that together you guys had done it, and because of the purity. And you can see that in Jason when he's on the interviews. And, you know, he talks about that you guys won sectional. So he talks about the team. And so there was another great point, is it that when you guys went on to your postseason run with it, Jason, you know, went back to his managerial position, and, you know, it's,
yep.
And so, you know, it just sounds like, you know, Jason just is, you know, is class, and is a humble kid all the way around, and, you know, got his opportunity, lived it, and now he's come back, and is he doing assistant coaching with you guys, or what?
Yes,
he's
been back on our staff for the last 5 years, and he loves it. He's actually, for the first 4 years, he was working our program, but he spent most of his time working with the JVs, and this year he actually spent his whole time with me, so that was really neat for me. And ironically, we've, you know, since that, for me, that it was 25 years before, as a coach, I was able to win a sectional championship, and we've actually won four now in the last 8 years, including this past year. You know, Jason was part of that, so he's all excited, and we have seven out of our top eight players back, so we're real excited for next year as well. So, so he's been a big part for us, and as I mentioned, you know, at the beginning, it's been special for me because our relationship continues to grow, which is great.
So what's Jason's next dream? You know, other than the,
you know what, I think he would like to be a college basketball coach someday, so I think that would certainly be a dream. He works at a local grocery store called Wegmans, which is not a national chain, but is going around the, you know, some of the East Coast, and He really enjoys that. He works at a local restaurant usually one night a week, and then he's over at the school a lot. He does a lot of work with our teams, and he's helping the track team right now. But we have an AU team that one of my assistants runs, and he's over helping to practice with that too. He loves basketball, so he wants to be around as much as he can. And he works basketball camps and helps our camp in the summer, and then he also goes to some out-of-town camps that he really enjoys now, too. So he's really become a real student of the game of basketball. So,
excellent. Now, I know we shared a little bit about this, but I know April is Autism Awareness Month.
Correct.
And I know that you talked a little bit about, like, with autism, that there was a need for routine. Is there something else that you might be able to share? I know we talked about it a little bit, but is it something specific that you can be able to share on how we can be able to become more aware and be able to have better relationships with people that we know that may have autism?
Well, I think that there are certainly some basic fundamentals that you have with anybody, and the fact that you show people you care, and that I think you have to understand some things about autism so that, that they're going to perseverate on things, and they're going to, tend to repeat things a lot to you. And, those are things that I'm very used to, that for someone that, like for the first time when they meet Jason, they can drive him a little crazy because they don't know some of those tendencies that you're going to see with someone that has autism. So I'm very aware of that, I accept that, and know that that's part of his makeup. And so I just love him because of who he is. He is so pure in the fact that he just wants to do the best he can and help others. And he cares so deeply about our basketball program. I mean, I kid everybody that you cut him, he doesn't bleed red. He bleeds black and gold. Our school colors. So he certainly a Greece Athena Trojan through and through. But those are the things I think the more that you're around someone with disability, you certainly pick up and understand it. But, the big thing that I've learned is that, that they're going to ask you the same things a lot, or they're going to repeat things to you a lot. And those are things I understand now, that when you first, it can drive you a little batty if you're not, aware of that type of thing.
Right. And I think it comes to mind as part of the four agreements is to be non-reactive kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And just to be able to, don't take it personally, just look at it. Because I know that in some of the information that I've picked up about learning with people with disabilities, like we've talked about my one client, because her emotional age was, like we said, 10, 12 years old in spite of her being 50 years old.
Mm-hmm.
But I also saw somebody who was able-bodied, who was 50-some years old, and when he got into an argument, he appeared to be 6 years old.
Right, yeah, absolutely.
So it's, and so when we see people with disabilities, is to be able to look at it is, and I'm not sure all this stuff, I just saw something, a video on dementia, and they showed CAT scans of the brains. And they also showed people with Alzheimer's compared to a CAT scan of a 2-year-old. And so with like a 2-year-old, you're not going to scream at them and try to logically explain to them why they ran out in the street and why it's a bad thing.
Right.
But they
right.
compared that, and that Alzheimer's brain and that 2-year-old brain were virtually the same.
Wow.
So to be able to deal with somebody with Alzheimer's who doesn't have the capacity to be able to understand the logic and doesn't understand those things.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if we have that kind of awareness, and I hope this does, this comes out right, but if we have the awareness that the wiring is different.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And we need to be able to be aware of that, of those differences, and to be able to, like you said, is look inside of the person and be able to be non-reactive, see what they're doing, see what their passions are going through there, and you know they're incredible people, and they can be our everyday heroes.
Absolutely. Right. Yep. No doubt. So.
Cool. Yep. Wow. I'm glad I snuck in some extra time on our show because we've gone through there. But that's great. So I know if people wanted to learn more and be able to keep track of you,
mm-hmm.
they can find you at CoachJimJohnson.com.
Correct. Yep, that's my website, and you know I'm on Twitter at CoachJimJohnson. I have Facebook and LinkedIn, and you know I'm involved with all those different things. So I certainly would love to hear it. We write a blog once or twice a week, and you know, we'll be coming out with a newsletter soon. So, I certainly would love anyone from the audience, if I can ever help anybody, certainly feel free to reach out to me. So.
Right, and I know that's where we connected. I know you connected with me on Twitter, probably because mm-hmm. you talked about the quotes that you shared, so it probably seems a natural link that you found a lot of the inspirational messages that I share out all the time. So it's
absolutely
a connection.
Yep. Cool. Yep, for sure.
All right. Well, as we're sort of wrapping up, was there anything that we didn't cover that you'd like to be able to share and let everybody know about?
I just think that the two things that I've talked a little bit about. The one is that you know, don't give up on people, that you know, show them that you care, and I think the principle of leadership is, you know, starting with you and the fact that, you know, what kind of model are you for others, and you know, and you know, living a life of service. I think that's you know, giving to others first, you know, and helping others make their dreams come true is really the old Zig Ziglar quote that if you help enough other people get what they want, you can have everything you want. And I think that's so true. You know, I just want to leave that with people that that there is hope alive, and keep giving, and help make it the world a better place. So,
cool. Excellent. Excellent. Well, thank you, Jim. And I just wanted to be able to dedicate today's show to my grandson, who's with autism, Kyle Mayer. So this is for you, Kyle. So we wish you all the best. And in closing, I just hope that someday people are going to be able to realize that people with developmental disabilities are just like you and I. If we give them a chance every day, we don't have to wait for a last game or a special time. They can be able to become our hero and an inspiration, just as we all can, each and every day. I have a great amount of respect for Coach Jim Johnson and his team and everybody that was involved in that magical night for showing us the right way to be. And in doing so, they've changed many, many lives for the better. So I'm completely inspired by this event. So I encourage you to go out, make your dreams come true, help somebody else achieve their dreams. Our world needs the infusion of hope that can arise from these efforts. Coach Jim, it was a pleasure sharing this time with you, and I'm sure we'll be talking with you soon. So when you get to Florida, we'll make sure we're going to connect.
Absolutely. Well, Gary, it was a pleasure to talk with you as well, and look forward to growing our relationship. So thank you for all you do, and keep up your great work.
Thanks, Jim. All right, good luck, and we'll talk to you soon. Everybody,
all right.
Have a great day. Goodbye now.
Thank you. Bye.